This is the Podcast Inc. production. Booyah!
And now, this is the moment podcasting fans listening around the world have been waiting for. Coming to you, not so live, from a listening device of your choice, it's time! Podcasting out of this corner, a mixed martial talker, holding no professional record, he stands at 6 feet 1 1/2 inches tall, weighing in at whatever he feels like, hailing out of Toronto, Ontario, Canada, presenting the sometimes angry, always funny, self-proclaimed podcasting champion of the world, Steve Fingerstyles.
So, welcome to another rendition of the podcast. I am here once again, always again, and joined by Canadian stand-up comedian and artist whose comedy album Horny hit number one on the iTunes chart, the multi-talented and hilarious Paul Thompson.
Yes. Thank you for having me, man. I'm excited to be here.
Thank you very much. You know what? Right off the bat, I know we're going to touch on Horny, and I want to get to know how you got into comedy and all that. But after seeing your comedy, I was nervous to intro you because of what you said during your Horny intro. And I'm like, shit, so I can't mention Joe Rogan. I can't mention JFL. Am I supposed to say that he jerks off? Like, what's going on here? So I'm like, okay, I'm going to make as generic.
That was just a good intro. You know what I mean? You can say whatever you want, though. I don't mind. But that was just a good way to get into, you know, that was like one of my jokes that I was working on, that it's just such a thing, like, where I can get a laugh 10 seconds in, you know?
Right.
And for that full hour of comedy, I just kind of wanted to come out swinging, you know? I don't want to have, like, right now, my new 45 minutes that I'm working on, it takes some time. But eventually, we're going to find something. But, yeah, that was just, I talked about the intros because it's just the quickest way to get into comedy right off the bat. That's funny, though.
Because I always wonder, what is the hardest part about putting a set together? Is it the intro? Is it the body? The outro? Like, what do you, in your opinion, what do you think is the hardest?
I think for me, for sure, yeah, I would say, I mean, they're all just, at the end of the day, I'm not trying to purposely build something to be an intro right off the bat or purposely build something to be a closer right off the bat.
Right.
I'm just doing, you know what I mean? I'm just making little jokes at a time, you know? Sometimes something's a minute and that turns into 3 minutes. Sometimes something's 3 minutes and it turns into 1 minute. Mm. But I'm just trying out ideas and they all start finding their way into that new hour of material, you know? And then something ends up just always being the intro and something ends up being the closer. And it's like, that's one of my favorite parts. It's just the whole process and building it. And like, I was so excited to get that album out and start working on new stuff. And now that I'm working on new stuff, it's really cool to see things that like belong at the end and things that belong at the start and this and that. And just, you know, it's such a fun puzzle piece to work around. And, oh, this joke will do better if they hear this joke first and this, you know?
It's so true. And especially if you're not a straight storyteller, obviously that's a bit different because you're telling a story, so you can't really place anything differently. But if it's like joke and bits and stuff, it's so much fun to see how comics put it together. Because even myself talking to you, a ton of you guys now and watching a ton of comedy, I always think when I'm watching, I'm like, would have that been better at the beginning? Or like, why did he do it this way? And then after there's a callback and I'm like, oh, that's why he put it there, because now he's calling back to it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I find edgier stuff is always good nearing the end. Just because, like, yeah, that's something that's going to stick with them. And it's kind of just like that just allows things to escalate. But I like really punchy stuff right off the bat. Okay. You know, like, I really like to come out and I have room for, like, jokes at the end that are, like, really funny and have big punchlines. But there might be, like, little 20-second, 30-second lulls in between. And that's not because it's, like, that's just the style of joke that it is.
Right.
There's also building tension, you know?
Yeah.
And so more stories and stuff nearing the end. But I always do like to open with stuff that, like, some jokes that are just like every 10 seconds there's a punchline, you know, because that's just like getting them to like, all right, here we go. But sure. I've also learned from doing comedy that originally I kind of almost wanted all my jokes to get like that. Once I started getting able to like have this writing style,
right.
And then I started getting jokes like that, which was great because I started getting bigger opportunities. I would do 7 minutes or I'd do 10 minutes and I would just crush it for 7 minutes and 10 minutes. But then once I started getting opportunities to do 30 minutes and stuff, I'd realize like after around 15, 20 minutes, like people don't have the energy for that, you know? True. So like, you can't just like, as much as you would like to think so, it's just not possible. You can't go up there for 45 minutes and just have a new punchline every 10 seconds, you know? And not that that's not possible to write. It's that it's like an audience just will not have that energy. They can't keep up. So it's you got to take little dips and stuff sometimes.
And that's the thing I always find with classic stand-ups and specials and stuff that stand the test of time, because people don't realize that the audience factor, the consumption, it takes into effect. So what people found funny in the 70s is not going to be funny today, probably, and vice versa. Like, you know what I mean? So it's always good to see a comic that doesn't rely on, I guess, not to say like pop culture, but to like not rely on the audience, so to speak, where they could just go joke, 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 joke. And even though it's a few decades later, people are still laughing their asses off.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting time. It's something that I tried to be definitely conscious of, in the sense that, like, especially with that album, I feel like that one, there's going to be a lot. The only topical thing is talking about like the pandemic, and people would know that, but there's not a lot of stuff that's like directly topical. There's references to movies and stuff, but everything's kind of older and stuff. Right. And I think that that's kind of where I want to go with, like, it's such an interesting thing that this is like just in the last 3 years, but there will be certain things that I'll be writing right now and I'll be like, okay, like that's for sure going to be in my next special on the next album. Right. And then there's stuff that I'm working and this is becoming good material, but I'm like, this is going to be like, I think I need to get this out now, you know, like that's super topical.
Sure.
And I don't think that, like, do I want that on an album? Like, is anybody going to understand that joke in 3 years? It's like, no. And it's like, because of Instagram and because of clips and stuff, you know, it's awesome that it's like, okay, cool. You know, it's all about that right now, you know?
No, that is so true, because that's the other thing that I always bring up too, is the Instagram stars and the so-called influencers who go into comedy because of their following. And then you see what ends up happening, obviously, to majority of them. But it's crazy because there's so many things against, like, your pure comic nowadays to be successful. Like, you know what I mean? In terms of the PC culture, to just like how you said, social media. Now you guys have to literally do everything and be jack of all trades just to get a name out there. And it's like, wow, like, it's just how the times change.
Oh, yeah. It's frustrating. I mean, for me, like, I definitely know that, like, especially in the last 2 years, like, the only route I have to, like, allowing my career to survive is just through making content and doing stuff on Instagram alone. See. Like, I'm never going to get enough attention from the industry, specifically in Canada. Like, that's just never going to happen.
Yep.
You know, so now it's like my only way in would be, and truth be told, too, like, some of my friends have gotten major success in the last 3 years. And there's no example of it that isn't for anything other than they did it on their own. They had YouTube or Instagram or something that their clips, they built their own fan base. The days of, like, I don't have a friend that's like, man, they're just for laughs taping got seen, and that, you know, like, that's what it was back in the day. You got put on this TV show. Everyone knows you from the TV show, or you're set on Comedy Now was really good. I mean, that's what happened with Russell Peters, right?
Exactly.
Like, Russell Peters was on Comedy Now, and somebody posted that online, and then people started downloading it online, and that Comedy Now turned him into who he is today, you know? But now it's not the case. But the person who produced his special produced Horny.
Oh, there you
right?
go. Nice.
But now we just do it on our own, straight to YouTube, because we don't have CTV or anything like that anymore, right?
But again,
we still have it.
It is a double-edged sword, because at least you're able to put something out, but it doesn't get the eyes as a major network, obviously.
Sure.
Right?
And it's like, yeah, it is, in the sense that, like, it's frustrating. There's a lot of stuff, too, that, like, I'll post, and, like, I just know that I'm like, I checked all the boxes. I think this is really good.
Right.
The response is really good. But for some odd reason, like, it's just not getting numbers type thing.
Sure.
And like, so many people will be like, oh, that's the funniest thing. I'm sending it around. I'll even see that it's getting lots of shares. But the algorithm can control things and stuff.
That's the thing.
Very frustrating. But it's just something that you kind of got to ignore. And but I do think, yes, as much as it might be like frustrating and stuff, at the end of the day, to find success in that way versus finding a success from being on a TV show or from this, that, it's way better. Like the way that, like, if we can find it on our own, because then we're in so much more control, you know. If I find success because I blew up on a CBC show, I'm not allowed to say this and that on stage, you know?
Right.
And that's not to say that, like, I would say no to a CBC show, but, you know, stand-up's most important. So if I was to get a show of some sort, I'd be willing to get fired, you know?
No, of course. And speaking of stand-up, you started at age 17?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. So what made you want to get into comedy to begin with? What was that trigger that was like, I want to try this and do this for a living?
Well, like, I always knew that I was going to do it, but it was almost more like how somebody, like, in a family business would be like, oh, I know when I grow up, my dad's an accountant.
I'm right.
An accountant.
Sure.
My dad, like, in his yearbook, had said he was most likely to be a stand-up comedian.
Oh, wow.
My dad ended up becoming a psychologist, but he loves comedy. And I remember growing up all the time, my dad would be like, he would put on stand-up.
Oh, nice.
And, yeah, and he'd be like, yeah, you should watch this. And he'd make me watch it, and I hated it. I always hated it.
Oh, my God. Yeah. That's hilarious.
Yeah, I always just thought it was super boring, especially because it was Canadian. I didn't understand it. It was just guys just talking.
Sure.
A lot of the time, they talk about politics. I didn't get it. But then even then, like, I would see, like, some of the greats. I know now that I can appreciate it, maybe. But I remember even being, like, from 12 to 14, even like 15, seeing like Robin Williams and, you know, George Carlin and stuff like that. Right. And I'd still just be like, I don't get it. Like, I just don't get it. I would just be bored 3 minutes in.
Mm.
But I always knew that I'm like, this is something I'm going to do as much as like, and I need to figure it out. I just knew that I'm like, that's what funny people do. All I care about. I loved making videos. I loved like public speaking.
Right.
I loved hosting events at school. I loved being on the microphone. So I was like, yeah, like, I don't know how to do this. And then, like, all respect given, truth be told, where I remember seeing Dane Cook when I was like 16, seeing like a clip of him or something.
Right.
He was talking about the Kool-Aid Man, and it was just so random and it didn't make sense. And it was like, man, and I actually laughed. I remember showing it to like my sisters and to my friends. And then everything I heard him say, I was like, oh, I get this. Like, I could do this. This makes sense, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So he was a huge inspiration. And I was writing always since I was 12, but I'd be like, oh, that's okay, that's all right. But he really inspired me. I started writing more. And then, when I was like 17, like, I just always knew I was going to do it. And then when I was 17, one of my teachers was just like, so yeah, when are you going to start doing stand-up? And I was like, I mean, whenever I get the chance. Sure. And he was like, all right, well, I called Yuck Yucks and they said that you can come in tonight. And I was like, okay, let's do it. And that was it. I, like, literally went home. I practiced for 3 hours, and then I went and did it.
Oh, my God. And how was that first experience? Were you nervous? Did you bomb? How did it actually go?
No. See, that's what's interesting. It's like, I get really, really, really nervous now.
Oh.
Like, always.
Okay.
But, like, at that point, I was making so many YouTube videos, and nobody was doing YouTube before.
Okay.
So, and just in my area, like, they all had 2,000 views, 3,000 views, but that was, like, everybody. When I was 15, 16, everybody from every high school, like, really would see my videos and stuff.
Okay.
So when I would show up to parties, people would be like, oh, you're the funniest guy, this, that, blah, blah. I can't wait till you start doing stand-up. I had a lot of people blowing smoke up my ass. I had, like, a TV show that they would play on CTV. Like, I was doing really good stuff for me.
Nice.
So I was just, like, I just felt like, you know, the prince, ready to become the king. I was like, cool. So I came. I was really confident. I had no nerves. The set went pretty good because it's Yuck Yucks and there was 200 people there. So the set went pretty good. Also,
nice.
I'm 17, so I think people probably find that funny. And then I came to Toronto and I did a set for Yuck Yucks again, maybe 200, 300 people in the crowd.
Okay.
It went pretty good. And I would say looking back, it went pretty good. But in my mind, I was definitely like, oh, I killed. but I know I didn't bomb, but I'm sure I didn't murder. But at the time, I thought with both those shows, I thought, oh, I'm the best on the show. And then one of my buddies who's like, I just met from doing stand-up was like, yeah, I'm going to go do a show at this pizza place. Do you want to come? And I was like, for sure. I'll perform anywhere. You know what I mean? This is it.
Yeah.
This is my life now. And I remember seeing older comics. I was, again, probably 18. And then the other like 23 and 25 and 30 year old comics and watching them, and they were doing pretty good. And there's only 8 people in the room. And, but I was like, okay, this is fun. And I remember when I went up, like, 0 laughs. Like, I just bombed. And, like, it hit me on stage as you're bombing. You're like, yeah, why did I think this was funny? So much of this stuff has passed just on confidence.
Oh no.
And then I did another like random like basement open mic, and like I was like, hey, let's figure this out, and like again bombed, and like then I pretty much like just bombed for like a year or two after, and was like, okay, and lost all that ego and everything. Then I started getting really good, and then things started happening, but I never got like that. You know, I seem very confident on stage and stuff, but I always, every show, I'm like, this is going to go bad.
Oh my God. That's crazy. But you mentioned it, pizza places, basements. What is the weirdest or, I guess, most zaniest venue you've ever performed at?
I mean, I would say that probably like, I mean, there's so many, and I can't think specifically of like a venue, but like I guess one of the craziest things is like private shows.
Oh, okay.
It's like if it seems right, like so like I've had like, you know, an old lady and like two of her friends
what?
Just have me like come to their living room and perform for 40 minutes.
Are you kidding me?
Oh yeah.
Holy shit.
And didn't do well. So it's like, why did you get bummed here? Yeah, like I just bombed. So it's like, I don't know why you wanted me here.
Oh, that's hilarious.
And then when I was done, like, thank you. And then they paid me and that's it. I mean, just recently, like a few months ago, I was doing a show up north, like in Muskoka area. And okay. It was just me and my friend were there.
Right.
And we got a message from like these kids who were like 24, 25. And like our cottage is 5 minutes down the road. Like,
right.
Can you come to a private show? And I was like to my buddy, do you want to do this? And he was like, man, like this seems sketchy, you know? And I was like, hey, like, we'll do it for like $200 each or something. And okay. They're like, yeah, that works for us.
Okay.
And then we're like, okay. And then, but my buddy was still sketched out, Ernie Vicente. And like, he's just a Filipino guy. He's like, I don't know, this seems weird. So then when he was on stage at the show we were doing, and the show we were doing too was like older people in cottage area. There's probably 8 people in the audience of the show we were doing before this. And Ernie just mentioned the scenario we had. And then one person in the audience is like, what's the kid's name? And we said the kid's name. He goes, yeah, I know his dad. He's a good kid. And we're all like, oh, okay, cool. You know what I mean? Like, he's like, no, he's like, that's a good family. That's a good kid. So we're like, cool. And we showed up. Amazing.
Oh.
Wild cottage. Like, unbelievable cottage.
Okay.
8 of them sitting on, like, a couch in this big family room. They're like, do you guys want a drink? We had a drink. We talked with them for, like, 5 minutes. And they're like, cool. Ernie did 20 minutes. I did 30 minutes. They loved it. And then we just like stuck around and like, yeah, I have all those guys on Instagram now. You know what I mean? Like, so those ones, like are weird scenarios, but sometimes those are the best. And I've done a lot of those where people are like, do you want to come perform for my family? And there's 6 people in the living room and I just commit. And then, yeah, they laugh. And then like, I end up hanging out with them and it's great. It's a lot of fun.
That's awesome. Well, you know, what's not weird is supporting the podcast. And if you want to support the podcast, please check out our sponsors, First Row Collectibles at firstrow.ca. Use promo code thepodcast20 to receive 20% off. They got a ton of stuff from the wrestling world, all the major sporting leagues, signed memorabilia, old comic books, old video games, you name it, they got it. Best thing is they ship worldwide. Even better, they update daily. So please visit them at firstrow.ca. And if you're into video games and books, please visit bossfightbooks.com for great books on classic video games. You'll find titles like NBA Jam, The Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask, Silent Hill 2, and so many others. Everything you see on their website is available in paperback and ebook format, so please check them out at bossfightbooks.com. And if you want to support me directly, you can visit my merchandise store at tpublic.com or scroll down on today's device you're listening to on. It's embedded right there in that description. Click on the link, takes you right to the merchandise store. I got everything from hoodies to travel mugs, phone cases, anything you need or want, it is there. But the easiest thing, the freest thing, the best thing to do to support the show is rate, subscribe, review on all major platforms, most specifically Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. All right, my friend, back to horny, because I got to pick your brain on this, because like I said, okay, you might appreciate this because you like to smoke weed and you enjoy probably consuming a lot of entertainment while you're smoking weed. And I didn't smoke weed and I still found it funny and the hour flew by. So right there, I knew there was something good. Like, you know, because it's hard to watch, like, again, you know, like, especially something comedic. Not that it makes it better, but it sort of enhances it, just a tweak. So even if it is bad, you can get through it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's my main thing. I don't really smoke as much weed as I used to. And now, like, that's the one place where I don't like really being around people too much smoking weed. Sometimes I do, but one thing I still just will never get rid of. And it might be, like, still like the only thing now. Like I don't really like smoking weed and eating or smoking weed and this. I just still just love smoking weed and watching movies. I really love that. It's so awesome.
There is just...
I know if I'm watching this thing for the next hour and a half, 2 hours, there's just something I can switch off and be like, don't put any pressure, just watch the movie.
And I find it even better when you do it before going to a theater and it's like 3D and shit.
I love that.
Right?
I love that. And I mean, one of my favorite things is, because I do get so anxious from weed now.
Okay.
One of my favorite things is smoking weed right before going in the theater. Right. And then as I'm in there, I start getting high. But then I get the popcorn and like I get really anxious. And I'm like, oh no, why is this guy taking so long? Why is this?
Oh no.
Once I've figured out everything and I'm like sitting down in the seat and now I know like I did it. Yeah. Now all I have to do is just sit here. Like, that's always the best feeling. I love it.
Oh my God. That's awesome. That's awesome. Okay. So how long did it take you to work on this album? And again, why did you choose 60 minutes? Because nowadays, a lot of comics are putting out 30. People are saying that's a new magic number. So walk me through this whole process.
So like this album and this special, like I'll never have another, I mean, like, I hope, but I can very confidently say I will never put this much time into another album or special forward. But this was my first one, right? And a lot of people right now rush into, like, here's my 30-minute album, here's my 20-minute album, this, that, because they just want to get onto, like, they want to get onto the radio and they want to make money. And it's like one of our only ways to make money as Canadian comedians. And like, unfortunately, like, you know, one of the main reasons why like I financially struggle is I do always kind of put the art first and I don't like things that compromise the art. And I think people that are 3 years into comedy, 4 years into comedy, sometimes even eight, but they know that they're not good at it, are just like making albums and just so that they can try and make money. And for me, I'm like, especially for your first album, like I don't want to compromise any of that. And then the reason why too, I want it to be an hour is like, I'm like, I have that material.
Okay.
I'm not like, I'm not stretching to make an hour.
No, you like, exactly.
I cut a lot. Like I was like, I think this could be a tight hour, which I want to put up to flex, but also like, I want people to sit down and actually like watch this on YouTube and the way that people watch specials and stuff. And for me, like, I know that like, yeah, the clips, people do like the clips, but like, if somebody's like interested in seeing your stand-up or someone sees me at a show and they want to watch something, like if for me personally, if I was like, man, that guy, I like his stand-up a lot, I'd be pumped to find out he had an hour special.
Right.
And if I saw that they had a 25-minute or a 30-minute special, I'd be like, ah, an hour special is the difference between, what am I going to do?
I know
now I'm going to sit down. And if it's 25 minutes, I feel like maybe I'll eat something and watch it.
Oh.
If it's around an hour.
I got you.
You know what I mean?
Because
what do you do for 25 minutes? But if it's around an hour, then like, I think like, yeah, I'm going to get friends and like, it's like a movie. Like I'm going to probably lie down on the couch. I'll have popcorn. I'll actually watch it. Like I want it to be like a movie experience. So I wanted it to be a full hour. I wanted it to be a full thing. And yeah, as far as how long it took, like that's what I took on the, so like, you know, like that's, there's a lot of, you start doing a lot of jokes. And then I guess like probably 3 years, 4 years into stand up.
Wow.
I started doing shows. I'm starting to get paid, but I bet you not, I don't even remember those jokes.
Sure.
So you start finding better jokes. But there's jokes, truly, truth be told, that are in there that I've been doing for 7 years, 8 years. So that was a big reason why I needed to do that. And that album should have came out way earlier, but I kept being cursed with it. Like I had, I shot that album the first time I tried to do like a lot of stuff on that album in maybe 2019 or something.
Oh, wow.
We lost all the recordings.
Oh, man.
No, that was probably 2018 maybe or 17, like earlier. Oh, like this has been for years.
Right.
So then I did it again. Well, we booked another thing again and I was like, hey, we're going to do another taping. I had the whole crew, the cameras, everything ready. And then the pandemic hit. So we had to cancel that date.
Right.
And then about a year later, we're like, okay, we're ready to go. You know, and the thing is too, like, I want to do this when I'm hot and when like things are going, like, not me, like I'm hot, like I'm popular. Like, it's like, I want to do this when like, I'm not like, I haven't done stand up in 6 months.
Right.
Like when I say like when I'm hot, I mean like I'm doing these jokes every night. Like I know them by the, like, you know what I mean? Like everything's tight, everything's ready to go. So during the pandemic, even when things come back, like, okay, well, I still need 6 months to like kind of get back to a comfortable place. That's just in my mind. And every time I'd be like ready to shoot it again, we'd get locked down again or something would happen. Mm-hmm. And then finally we were just able to do it. And by time, you know, there were certain stuff that had been there for 8 years. There's certain stuff in there that I'd been doing for 6 months. But that final hour was like, yeah, this is the one. And yeah, that was it. And that took like 8-9 years. And now, you know, I'm kind of like pretty much like right now, like I did half an hour this weekend, and I was doing like, I've done a couple hours in the past like couple months, and like,
okay,
the hour's 50 minutes of that hour is new. So I'm ready to go again, and I should be ready like next year with the next special. And hopefully that'll probably be 45 minutes too.
Oh, there you go. Know? Well, again, it's like how you said, it's tight. And even I said it, it flew by. It didn't seem like there was any stretch, any lull. You went from joke to story to joke, and you kept going. And again, you mentioned it, everything is tight. Everything you memorized perfectly. But has there ever been a time where you're on stage and you forgot some of your material?
So, like, kind of like not that I can really remember. I think not like that it's ever been like bad. Like maybe I'd be like, oh, I forgot I was going to do that, and I would do a different joke instead or whatever. But it's okay. Always been something that I worried about.
Right.
I remember I remember one time 10 years ago, I was too high and I started panicking on stage. I was 3 minutes in.
Oh no.
And I was just, yeah. And I just bailed, but that never happened again. But I never forgot anything until, and now this haunts me, that did just happen. And it happened like 6 months ago. It happened this summer.
Oh shit.
Yeah. I was in Newfoundland and I was just drinking all day. And a lot of my buddies that I was on the show with, like some of them haven't even like, I've been friends with them for like, but they're Newfoundland comics and I've been friends with them for like years.
Right.
But they haven't really like, we haven't done a show together yet. So that sucks because it actually was like a high stakes show. And then they asked me to go last and I was like, cool. And it was just a classic like Newfoundland crowd and people just kept giving me shots and I just didn't say no, period. And I did a lot of shots and it just like caught up to me and I didn't think it was anything bad. And I mean, I've drank a lot and like I've still always just smooth through the set.
Right.
And there was something about that one where I was definitely so in it that there was a few jokes that halfway through and full on stage, I was like, I don't remember. I'm sorry. But I still did like 45 minutes and tons of messages the next day where people were like, oh, that was super funny. And everybody else was like, I'm so sorry. And everyone's like, don't, it was great.
Right.
I'm still mad because I'm like, man, I wish you heard my material. But people said it was still fine. But now I'm like, because prior to that too, I was always like, it was almost part of like the act for certain things. Sometimes if I go to like a college show or whatever, like I'm just like, I will drink with you guys for 2 hours before the show and I'll still do the show.
Wow.
You know, like I've done shows where they've sent me like 9 shots on stage and like people love that. But that, after that happened in the summer, I was like, okay, I'm 34. Like, I guess I can't really do that rock star stuff anymore.
Catches
you know?
Up to you. Yeah.
It just has to stop at a certain point. You know?
Well, and that's the thing. And you don't want to be known as the drunk comic, right? That's the other thing.
No, exactly. So, I mean, I still drink before shows, like sometimes. And sometimes I don't, but I just watch it now, you know?
Yeah, you just got to be a bit more responsible, as they say, right?
For sure, yeah. I can't just be going 8 shots in an hour before going on stage.
That's
just like,
crazy.
That can't happen anymore.
Yeah, yeah. I know. Well, that's, yeah, that's when the brain shuts down.
Yeah, totally. And that's what happens, so, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Well, again, back to Horny. Speaking of the PC culture and navigating through it, you dropped some bombs on this. Like, obviously, a lot of racial talk in this. Fucking animals. Like, you know what I mean? All this sort of stuff. And it's like, was there anything where you thought this is too much? That it's like, uh-oh, maybe I went too far?
Not at that point, because everything that I would have done on the album is like, I've done it 100 times. So there might be stuff that I kind of am good at pulling off where it almost might look like on the album or look like when you see me perform some of those shows live. Like this is the first time I've done this. So you could feel that tension where I'm like, oh, maybe I shouldn't be saying this, maybe that. But I know in everything that I say, I know when people are going to get offended and I know how I'm going to bounce back from them being offended, this, that. And I also know that in everything that I say there, like, I have had people complain and I've been able, like when somebody complains too, I'm never just like the type of person to be like, oh, cancel culture. Everyone's so sensitive. When someone comes up to me and is like, I'm offended by this joke.
Okay.
I listen wholeheartedly, you know? And I think that people are very sensitive and just like to be bullies and just don't belong in comedy shows. And I would say 90% of the time I listen wholeheartedly and then I'm just like, well, you're wrong. But I listen wholeheartedly because there is sometimes when people will explain this is why this is offensive and I'm like, yeah, you're right. And I'll either rewrite something or I'll even just stop doing that. Time it's ready to be recorded, yeah, I stand by with 100% every word of everything that I say in that recording. And I'm more than willing to argue it all day. You know what I mean? Like, and listen to anybody. But there, at this point, it's like, you know, and it's funny because once that got released, then certain people come out of the woodworks and there's certain people being like, this is so offensive and that's so offensive. And it's like, I just don't care because those jokes I've done, most of them, like 500 times across Canada and the US and England, you know? And if those people weren't offended, and now it's like, well, now when it hits the internet, you know, there's one particular joke that I did that, like, it got a lot of views on the internet and a bunch of people started being like, this is just blah, 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 saying how offensive it is that I should be canceled. And I just... I've done that joke easily over 700 times for a million different old audiences, young audiences, black audiences, white audiences. Right. No one's ever said anything. It's always done well. So, of course, when you're in your, like, the comfort of your own home and you can pick this thing apart to pieces, you can be like, this is why what you said is, like, and you're just like, shut up, you know?
Right.
I would know. If something's offensive, it's more so people go like, you know, when you said that, that this references this, and you're like, oh, I didn't know that. Sorry, you know,
right.
But anything else that I'm saying, oh yeah, I'm trying to, like, if you're offended at once it's out in the album and I'm like, I've worked that stuff to, oh yeah, I stand by it. So it's like, if anybody's offended by anything in that album, it's like, message me, good, but I'm happy. It's like, good, you know, I don't want everybody to think it's like, you know, I want to ruffle some feathers.
Yeah, no kidding.
And with my new material right now, I'm doing that way more. That's what we need. Awesome. Big time in comedy right
it's
now.
True, because it's not that it's, you gone know? stale, it's just that you have to tippy-toe around a lot of stuff. Like, you know what I mean? Like, even like your observational stuff that people will take as racist, like your Chinese joke about the restaurant. And like, that's an observation. How could people turn that into a racist joke? Like, you know what I mean?
Oh, for sure. Definitely.
Like, yeah. People just don't understand.
Oh, yeah. No, for sure. And I mean, like, I grow up with such a multicultural, like, group of friends, and, like, my group of friends still is so many, like, and the funniest stuff that we laugh about is racist.
Right?
No peace around, like, no beating around the bush. Racist at all. When it's me and, one of my Chinese friends, and one of my brown friends, and one of my black friends, like, right. And we're ripping on each other, it's full-blown racist, and it's hilarious, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, and it's like, we're allowed to say that because we love each other. We know we're all good people. And
exactly.
Like, you know what I mean? It's just like, yeah. So, like, even that stuff, that's observations. But it's like, I mean, I have stuff now that, like, I'll full-on do Chinese accents and stuff, you know? There's people getting canceled over that. And I'm like, I don't
right?
care. It's funny. I don't care.
It's crazy, like, what the cancel culture has been able to do. Like, again, I'm not Indian, and I don't know if you could contest this, but canceling even, like, the likes of Apu, who is a cartoon character. Like,
it's wild.
Thank you, right? Like, how crazy is that?
It's insane. I mean, the other thing is, too, here's one of the things that bothers me the most with the cancel culture, and I think that, like, I hope we can move past it, but in my personal experience, and the Apu is a perfect, good example, is, like, I grew up with so many brown friends, and so many of my friends right now are brown.
Right.
And I know from every single one of them, they all think that that's stupid. So how does this come to the surface? Well, 99% of the time, surprise, surprise, it's a white girl. All the time. Mm. I do so many all black shows, Jamaican shows, African shows.
Right.
Maybe two or three times a year, I get a message or I get people coming up to me after shows saying what I'm doing is cultural appropriation. I've performed for over 30,000 in the last 5 years, black people. Wow. Never once has a black person told me what I'm doing is cultural appropriation. The only person who's ever accused me of cultural appropriation is a white woman. There's definitely something to be said there. And it's funny because, you know, the straight white man is the devil right now. But yeah. I'm just trying to make people laugh. I'm not out there trying to come up with silly words like cultural appropriation. Like,
Thank you.
I understand. Don't wear a headdress. There's certain stuff. Don't do blackface.
Well, of course. Yeah. We all have. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But if I'm up there talking about Black culture and Asian culture, it's like, what was I, did you want me to just talk about The Cottage and Tragically Hip? Fuck out of here. You know what I mean? Like, of course, like, it's just the dumbest thing in the world.
It's so, you know, true. So, like,
yeah, but it's funny that it's never like, if that's offensive, if a poo's offensive, then I just want to hear one brown person, one brown guy or brown girl tell me that they do think it's offensive.
Right.
Because none of my friends do.
That,
at all.
That's such a great point. And yeah, this whole cultural appropriation, I don't know where it came from. And it's like now, like what? I always lead it to, don't we eat everybody's culture? Like, Canada is a melting pot, and we all pick off 100%. Each other. So what? Are you supposed to just stick with your race and that's it? Isn't that a form of racism in itself? Like, you know what I mean?
Yes. And it's crazy. Segregation and division. It's right? It's terrible. Yes.
Stupid.
Yes. And it's like, yeah, my favorite thing is I love Bollywood movies. I watch Indian movies.
Okay, yeah.
Like, I go to the movies all the time with my Indian friends.
There you go.
And they love that, you know? And then there's certain white people like, that's amazing, you know? Right. And then again, there'll just be white people who are just bored bullies.
Okay.
Like, isn't that cultural appropriation that you like that? That I like another culture? So what is the alternative? If your definition of cultural appropriation is a good thing, then that means that I just stay at home. And I only listen to Celine Dion. I only watch white Canadian TV shows. That's awful. We don't grow anywhere. Then white people stay white people.
Yeah.
You know? Where it's like, yes, let's all blend and be a melting pot. That's the best thing about Toronto is that, you know, you can find a black guy who knows more about anime than the Japanese guy in Toronto and the Japanese guy that knows more about basketball than the black guy.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean?
Good point.
It's like, and what's wrong with that? That these were stereotypes, black people are supposed to like black, like basketball. Like, no, that's wrong. You know, just because I'm white, I should know how to play cribbage. Like, I don't. You know what I mean? I know how to play dominoes. Like, you know, like that's just.
2 points, I know.
Yeah, you should just be able to like what you like and like, who cares? Like, and it's beautiful. Embrace that too.
Yeah.
Cultural appreciation, you know?
It's so true because it's, and it's like how you said, it's always someone who has nothing to do with what's being made fun of at the time. And it's like, if the people who are being pointed out don't care and are laughing at it, why should you care? And it's like, what's missing in your life that you have to do this? And aren't you really now becoming the person who's the bully and picking on people if you're canceling someone?
110%.
What the fuck?
But what's beautiful about that, like, I mean, I've been saying it, and people who I know have been saying this, and we will see it. Things are going to get better in the cancel culture world and this whole thing over the next 2 years.
Up too. Yeah.
Because,
yeah.
And this is already happening now, but because, and I maybe there's a recording of it. I've said this for years. I hope that there's proof of it. But people like that that are being the bullies and don't think that they're being the bullies, and when they get that extremist to wanting to point fingers, they always end up eating their own. And that's what's happening right now.
That is true.
You know?
Yeah.
Because if you've never tried to cancel somebody and all of a sudden you're trying to get canceled, your fans will just stick with you.
Right? That's true. That's a good
point. But if you're Ellen DeGeneres, who is always holier than thou, and you're pointing fingers, when we see you about to get canceled, people love to see it.
Yeah.
They love to see it.
That's a good point.
People, and it's happened in our industry a lot. There's been comedians here that have like just always, you shouldn't put this person on your show, you shouldn't put that person on your show, you shouldn't be. And the second some dirt comes out on that person, we're all super happy to just watch you get, because you made, that's the bed that you made.
Right? Exactly.
You know what I mean? So
exactly.
It's like, you're the one that created this whole game where people can get bullied and have their careers ruined. So now when you're on the chopping block, no one's yelling stop. We're actually all gathering to watch you die from your own poison.
Exactly.
You know?
It's so true.
And that's it. So I stay out of it. Somebody does something offensive, which I don't think anything really offends me, but even if something did maybe offend me, there's certain things I keep it to myself. I'm not writing, oh, it's gross. It's gross how many people claim to be comedians, especially in Toronto, and they're critics. You know, artists and critics are two opposite sides of the spectrum.
Right.
So, like, it's insane how many people have just so many opinions. It's like, yeah, I have an opinion too. Like, you're garbage. What you do isn't comedy. But they're just like, I don't think this person should that. You're a critic. And honestly, if you put your heart into that, maybe you'd be like good at, right, I don't know, work for the Toronto Star or something, write reviews. But like, you're not a comedian. You're not an artist. Artists support other artists. You
That's
know, whether they
point.
Struggle or, you know, like, brutal. Yeah.
It's so true. And that's so sad. And again, it's, and who is to judge what, okay, we know what's right from wrong, but who is to judge, again, who's to be offended, who's not to be offended? Like, you even bring it up in your act too, where you're like, it's easier to talk about getting fucked in the ass than it is to talk about God. Like who made that the, like, yeah, like the broad, like, what the fuck? Like, who cares?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's just social, different things. And the thing is, too, it's like, I agree when it's like, with comedy, what's beautiful, but it's still strange that people don't see this. It's like, I agree with, like, who is to judge with all art. Like, I'm like, I'm super, like, with, like, a painting or something like that, I would never have a bad thing to say. Okay. With comedy, there's times where I just said that. I just said that there's certain people out there who are trash. Mm-hmm. But the reason why I say that is because I've seen you perform and no one's laughing. The job in comedy is to make someone laugh. There's a lot of comedians who I think are awful, who I don't think are funny, who I think are hack, but their audiences like them and they laugh. So I keep my mouth. I would never say that that person's terrible. In my opinion, I'm like, I don't want to watch it.
Sure.
But you have a bigger fan base than me, or you're making people laugh.
Exactly.
That's what I don't understand, mm-hmm, is the amount of people critiquing comedians when it's like, but you just saw me kill.
Right.
So if 30 people are in the audience and all of them were just laughing, how important do you think you are, that your opinion matters, that you think I shouldn't do that anymore?
I know.
The job is to make people laugh. And when people laugh, they're happy. I just brought happiness to 30 people. And now you're going to tell me why there's something wrong with what I just said? You know how horrible of a person you have to be? How much of a soul-sucking demon to see people laughing and enjoying, and you come in and stop that?
Right.
That's insane. You're the definition of, like, you're turning off the music at the party.
Yeah.
You loser. You loser. Get the fuck out of comedy. You don't belong here. Your opinion doesn't belong here. It's poison to comedy.
Yep.
You're an awful, awful person. Leave. Just leave. I don't care. If you're offended, then leave. It's not for you. But to try and tell me to stop it when other people are enjoying it,
yeah, loser. That's always, I always found ridiculous too. It's like, and the best comment is when a critic goes to a show, doesn't like it, and is like, oh, I would love to see if this person performed in front of a different audience. And it's like, they wouldn't, because his fans are coming out to support him. Like, what the fuck's wrong with you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And whoever your favorite is, tell them to come perform for my audience. Okay.
Right?
They're not going to do well there.
Exactly.
So let's stick to what we do.
Oh,
you know?
It's so crazy, these critics. I don't know. Again, it's a different breed. And it could be, they could chalk it up to being jealous, to chalk it up to they don't have skills, so they're trying to knock other people down to their level. Like, whatever it is, it's ridiculous. And but the funny thing is it's like how you said, even when it comes to all these social justice warriors, they always come out. You see them eventually. Like, there hasn't been one bad critic or bad person that has gone a whole career and not gotten, like, you know, shitted on. Like, you know what I mean?
Oh, all day. Yeah, absolutely. Always. No matter who you are. And today more than ever.
Yep.
You know? And it's hard that there's... It's funny how many people just don't ignore stuff. You look at Taylor Swift, and it's like either people worship her or they think she's literally a product of the devil. It's like, why can't she just be a country singer and maybe you don't like her music?
Exactly.
Maybe you like... You know, I like one song, and that's it.
There
that's
you go.
About how much I... That's about how much I think about her. I don't hate this person that I don't know or listen to. I think she's cool, and I'm happy for her success. That's it.
And I find that so weird when people hate on a complete stranger for being successful. Like, how weird of a trait is that? Like, like you said, you might not like it, so move on. Turn the channel, plug your ears, do whatever. Yeah. But to actually go out of your way to send hate mail or this or that, that always blew my mind, man.
Oh, it's mind-boggling. And kind of brand new, too. That, like, that's this is true. Very common now. I'm sure there was people writing letters that were known psychopaths in the 90s, you know? But I feel like in the 90s, like, if you were to just be like, I hate Bob Barker. Price is Right. I hate, like, people would be like, what is wrong with you?
Right?
Where thank now, you. If you just, like, literally, if you now just full-on make a post and you're just like, I hate this person, people are like, okay, yeah, that's normal. It's normal to just hate somebody. That's so brutal.
I know.
Yeah, people are haters.
It's so crazy. Well, I want to shift a little bit because you're also an actual artist, painter. Mm-hmm. You like to do stuff like that. When did you start painting and when did you know you're actually good at it? Because I saw some of your shit and my friend, it's good, man.
Thank you. Yeah, I always painted. I always liked to paint.
Okay.
It's just like fun, but I definitely wasn't good.
Really?
But around, yeah, I never was really good. I started thinking I was good. Same thing as stand up. I definitely thought I was good.
Okay.
But then I was like, but you know, whatever. I thought I was creative. I don't know if I definitely would say I was classically good. Now I'm like a classically trained like painter, where I'm like classically good at portraits and stuff.
Right.
But I think at the time I was like, I thought I was creative or original or whatever, but it was just, I just liked doing it. I didn't really think too much of it. But then around like 2017 specifically, I don't know, something just happened. I just started getting a lot better. And people started telling me like, that weren't just friends.
Okay.
You know, like started like random people started being like, you painted that? And I was like, yeah, they're like, that's really good. And then, yeah, I started getting pretty good, like definitely pretty good. And then when the pandemic hit, I was just on my own and I was so pumped and I was studying art history so much and hearing stories from the 1600s and the 1700s. I mean, even the 1800s of artists that just, you know, cell phones don't exist. This doesn't exist.
Right.
That they were just like, oh, I was just in the middle of such and such and I would just paint 18 hours a day and that's all I would do and this and that. And it's like, man, I just hope that, like, when else would I get to experience that? So when the pandemic hit, certainly for the first three, four months, I really, truly did paint 16 hours a day. I didn't talk to, like, I talked to people on the phone while painting and stuff, but I didn't talk to anybody in person, nothing.
Wow.
And it was incredible. It was amazing. Like, it was so, such an awesome experience. So, yeah, like, yeah, that was just the best. Like, just doing all that and, yeah, then I got really good, and just another thing. I don't know. I just like – I stay true to art, and, like, stand-up is, like, you know, that's an art to me, and everything's, like, an art. So I just like to just focus. Now where I'm at right now, it's, like, it's so far in this year, like, I'm just mainly just writing, and it's the most writing I've done in years, you know?
Sure.
And this time next year, I don't know, you know? When I was young, I used to make music all the time.
Oh, wow.
It's like, you just – things just change, you know? I just – but as long as you're being creative – to me, it's beautiful, you know? And right now, like, I moved and I can't bring any of my paint supplies or anything like this.
Yeah.
And it's like, it makes me like you know, it's like sad because then I'm like, okay, well, now I can't paint. But at the same time, you're like, I just have to remember that it's like, yeah, it's not about painting or stand up or anything. It's about being creative. Mm. So now I'm just like, okay, what if that's being taken away from me, then like, what is, you know, life trying to force me to do? And then it's like, okay, well then let's write more, let's do this more. As long as I'm being creative every single day as much as I can, it's all gonna lead to somewhere, you know?
No, that's awesome to hear. No, of course, exactly. You just roll with the punches, as they say, right?
Yeah, totally.
No, that's cool. Okay, so what are some of your favorite pieces that you've done over the years?
That myself personally?
Yes.
For some odd reason, it's like my go-to, and this was, again, like right at the start of the pandemic, I started working on, I had a picture of my sister and my niece, and I was studying old art, and I really like old, like, Renaissance, like, I love, like, I love religious art a lot, like, I really love religious art, so, like, my sister was, like, in a house coat, but, like, I changed the house coat to, like, red, and just something about it, it just, to me, like, I'm so proud of it. Whenever people are, like, oh, they've never seen my paintings, it's always one that I show them.
Oh,
it's just, like, and I added a little halo in the background, but, like, the way that they would do it in the 14, 1600s, where the halo is just a circle, and it glows, there's something about that piece that just, I don't know, I like it a lot. And then also, too, then I have this one painting of Tiger Woods, and I put a little Tiger Woods in an older Tiger Woods, and that was so hard because as big as the painting is, like, their faces are so small, so, like, I had to, like, get, like literally, like, a pin.
Oh, shit.
Like, I got the end of, like, a tack to, like, paint their eyes and stuff. It was so complicated, but now when I look at it, it just pops, and I did each little blade of grass individually. I put a lot of work into it. So I really like that one too. And then my album cover, I painted that.
Oh, right? Did you? That's awesome.
Yeah. And that's like a massive animal orgy. It's
right?
Wild. Yeah. And that was, so when I say that I locked myself in and I was painting for 16 hours a day, that was the main one that I was working on. And, gotcha. And if I didn't have that kind of time, I would never be able, that painting's 4 feet, right?
Shit.
And it's like, there's a lot going on in that painting.
Wow.
And then, yeah, it was kind of cool that ended up being the album cover. And yeah, I was happy with that. So that's a big piece, because that took me 3 years straight to finish
wow,
that. So
that's crazy.
Happy with that one too.
No, that's so cool. Yeah. How about painting anyone live? Have you done any of those portraits?
No, because one thing with me too is that like I didn't go to art school or anything like that.
Okay.
You know, I've picked up techniques from like learning from like techniques.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I would say like I've learned like, oh, this person would do this and use this oil to make something like this. And
okay.
I'm like, oh, okay. So I've learned more. Yeah. Not techniques, like little tricks, like tips and tricks.
Sure.
Other than that, just practice. I got better. But one thing I will say is like, it takes me a long, long time to paint, and especially if I'm doing a portrait.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of my like technique is like, I know how to start and I can start to do like this. And then it just like, it looks bad. And then I'm like, hey, I have to fix the nose. And then I'm just consistently fixing until all of a sudden I'm like, hey, it's good. That's pretty much what I do.
Gotcha.
You know, I just keep fixing and fixing and fixing. So I wouldn't be able to do it live. Like, definitely not.
No. Okay, how about this? In a different universe, if you were able to do a live, which celebrity would you choose to paint nude?
Oof. That's a good question. I'd probably say, like, Shania Twain.
Oh, okay. Current or prime Shania Twain?
And honestly, it doesn't really matter to me. I love Shania Twain.
Oh, there you
like,
go.
She was like my first crush.
Ah.
I'm not really, like, I mean, I like some of her songs too.
Sure.
Like, you know, but yeah, but like, I, yeah, yeah, no, I like her music too. I do listen to her music and stuff. But I'm not saying, when I say I love her, I'm not like the massive diehard fan of the music. I like the music. Comes up in the shuffle. But I also think like, yeah, I think she's really talented. But I think, yeah, I would love to like, I think she's beautiful. I love Shania, yeah.
Well, she's a Canadian
Actually,
icon
Dion,
too, right?
You know, like I love Canadian icons. Her and Celine Dion, I love Celine Dion. But Celine Dion, like that's for everything too. Celine Dion's music is like,
yeah,
I think the best in the world. I love Celine Dion. But yeah, Shania Twain probably. That would just be to like, of course, that's like my longest running, that's my first crush ever, my longest running fantasy, you know?
Well, there you go. Maybe in another universe you are painting her then.
I'd like to believe it.
Because you know what I thought you were actually going to say to, again, for a callback, was going to be you'd want to paint Shaq nude.
Oh, 110%. For sure. Like, of course. I would love to see that. Yeah, big time. Big time, no pun intended. Yeah.
Right? There you go. Okay, before we wrap this up, how about this? What has been the most recent TV show or even movie that you've watched that you've really enjoyed?
So it's not that recent, but there's a movie that if I can recommend it to people that like at this level, I would still say is like, I think this is probably like, my favorite movie is like a Bollywood movie and I really like watch a lot of Bollywood movies.
Sure.
So I would still say like the title of my favorite movie goes to this, but as far as like North American movies, this is probably like my favorite. And I just saw it. This came out like 5 years ago, but there's a movie called Brigsby Bear.
Okay.
It was in Sundance. It wasn't that there's a guy called Kyle Mooney who makes really good sketches, online. He's on Saturday Night Live too. You might recognize him and stuff. I just know that like I follow him on Instagram and he said that him and his friends got together and made this movie called Brigsby Bear. And then they're like, oh, it premiered at Sundance. And it never got big enough that it wasn't in theaters here.
Mm.
And I just found a way. I was just every single day I would check online, try and find Brigsby Bear. Then randomly I found like a way that I could just illegally download a copy of this movie.
Sure.
And just because I was out of curiosity to see it and truly like, I think it's on Amazon Prime now and stuff like that. But, like, it's like one of those perfect movies. I really just love that movie so much. It's so good. And I've recommended it to, like, a lot of different types of people when they're like, oh, I want to watch something. That's always the first thing that comes to my mind now is Brigsby Bear. And everybody loves it. It's super cool. And it's definitely one of those ones that, like, don't read into the plot too much or whatever. Just trust me. Just watch it. You'll love it. It's very, very, like, it's everything. Very good. Dramatic, heartfelt, really, really funny, very, very funny, genuinely laugh out loud. I loved it. Yeah, that's my recommendation for sure.
Oh, no, that's awesome. Okay, how about this, though? When you used to smoke weed on a regular, what was your go-to stoner movie?
go-to stoner movie. Well, I don't know if this really counts. Like, when I was young, I guess, like, go-to stoner movie. Oh, you know what? I like watching Kill Bill a lot.
Okay.
I almost would say, like, stoner. Because there's, like, I remember, like, when you say that specifically, like, when I was getting high in 18, 19, like, I just remember, like, the colors and stuff. And all of a sudden, there's, like, a scene where it's anime and stuff. Right. I love being high. Yeah, like, that movie got me. I don't like, superhero stuff or comic books or anything. And, like, that movie got me into, like, anime, which I thought would never be a time. Other than Pokemon, if that counts. But I never thought I would get into, and now I'm, like, into, like, Akira and Ninja School and stuff. Just because I love getting high and watching anime, like, much. But I also love, once I start getting into, like, mushrooms and acid and stuff like that, playing Wizard of Oz and Dark Side of the Moon at the same time.
What?
Have you ever done that?
No.
Have you heard of this?
No. Why? What's
up? You can go on YouTube even and just type in Dark Side of Oz. Even if you just want to play like Dark Side of the Moon off YouTube, but they'll pair it up and you can watch in the background. It should just straight up be on YouTube. You should, If you just want something on in the background, but keep checking out, like, you know, like listening to text. Sometimes I'll paint, and like, especially if I'm painting with someone, I'll put that on.
Right.
But then I'm like, keep taking a look at like the screen. And sometimes you do look over, especially when you're high and you're like, what is it? It pairs up perfectly.
That's crazy.
People like they put on screenings like across the world.
Oh yeah. Okay. I got to check this out now. Okay. That's it.
Yeah. The Dark Side of Oz. It's very strange. Okay. Start them both at the same time. Right. Like when the tornado starts hitting Dorothy, there's like that's in Dark Side of the Moon where you hear like whoop, 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 whoop,
oh my whoop, god. That's
the
crazy.
Second it turns color, money starts playing. It's the other side of the album. It's so there's a lot of really strange stuff that happens.
Okay. I'll make sure to check it out indeed.
Yeah, it lines up.
Oh my goodness. When I was younger, the one I used to love watching, and obviously because you're smoking weed, would be Half Baked. And even at one point when I used to watch it, even by myself or with a group of friends, we would smoke every time someone would smoke on screen. By the time you finish the movie, you're fucking ripped.
Yeah. And that's in Toronto, too.
I know, right? It was perfect.
Yeah, that's a legendary one.
Has to be, right? That has to be number one, I think.
So good.
Oh, my goodness. That's awesome. All right, Paul. Thank you so much for coming aboard today. Really appreciate it, my friend. It's been a blast talking about a ton of stuff.
Yeah, thank you.
Promote whatever you want to promote. Shows, social media, floor is all yours, my friend.
Yeah, I always just say, like, the best thing is just Instagram, you know? I just really hope that people will follow me on Instagram, and that'll get you everything. I never really have, like, right now, there's nothing, not too many big shows coming up to promote or whatever. My main thing right now that I'm putting my focus into is just trying to have like consistent content on Instagram. I'm really trying hard with these like sketches and with these reels. I'm really happy with some of the stuff that's going to come out soon. And like, I'm just doing all this stuff. So it's always just better. Just follow me on Instagram and that's where I'll post new paintings. And I'm going to start directing some short films and doing all this stuff. And everything's just like the best thing you can do is just follow me on Instagram.
Awesome.
Paul Thompson Comedy.
And for myself, you can find me on Instagram and X under Finga Styles, or you can follow the podcast on X, the podcast app. Email us your thoughts, suggestions, comments, anything you want to get off your chest at thepodcastapp@gmail.com. So please support those fine sponsors because if it helps them, almost definitely helps me out. Rate, subscribe, review on all the major platforms. And if this is the first time you listen to the podcast and you like what you heard, please go back and listen to other comedians like Mike Rita, Jean Paul, Dave Merhege, Keith Pedro, and a ton of other amazing comics as well. All right, one last thing before I let you go. You brought it up, directing. I know you dabbled in a little bit of acting. We really didn't get to touch on that. How about this? Being a comedian, being an actor, what sitcom would you want to come back to continue the story?
I'm diehard Full House fan.
Oh, but they already did that, though.
Yeah, so they kind of already did that. I'm like almost more saying like bring it back again. Like I love Full House. Okay, so that's why I just addressed it right off the bat because I'm like I have to mention Full House. I have tattoos of Full House.
Oh shit! Wow.
I'm obsessed with Full House. But okay, but if it wasn't Full House, and I guess they brought back Fresh Prince.
Yeah, they did that too. That's right.
Yeah, they brought that back. I like Fresh Prince a lot. Sitcom. I'm trying to think. Like, so old school sitcom, eh?
Yeah, well, you think I'll throw out mine, Married with Children.
Married with Children would be a very big classic to come back.
Right, yeah. And then have the Bundys as grandparents, and then you see Bud and Kelly's kids. Mm-hmm. Kelly has like 15 kids or something.
Yeah, that I would love to see that.
Right.
There's also a show called My Wife and Kids.
That's a classic.
I love My Wife and Kids. That was so funny.
It was.
I would love to see that come back.
But you know what? Watching it now, they would not get away with some of this shit. Like, there was this one episode that I caught the other, and it's still on Disney, at least up here in Canada, because our Disney is crazy. We have all kinds of shit on there. But there was this one episode where I was watching where Kyle is the main character, right? Yeah, Kyle. He was talking to his wife, and he was literally shaming her for being fat. I was like, holy shit. I'm like, this would not go past anyone today.
No, yeah. And it's so like, yeah. But there is that show is really funny.
That's a good shout out. I like, again, very, classic.
Very funny. I love My Wife and Kids. Yeah, that was a great, great one.
Oh, my God. Oh, that's awesome. Well, on that note, he's Paul. I'm Steve. This is the podcast. Peace.